terms of the procurement of the four new prisons, okay, we now have the benefit of Treasury Regulation 16, so it has been done fully in terms of that process. And the feasibility study was undertaken, and it considered three options. Once again, building it conventionally by DCS, or doing a PPP as Mangaung and Grantuma is, or also it also looked at an option where there's sort of a shared services between on the operational side between the department and the private sector. The analysis or the modeling, the outcome of the modeling in terms of 2007 terms is included in the presentation, but the outcome was very much, again, similar to what was also the outcome of the IGNIS report and also the cost that we saw earlier, the actual cost, very much similar in terms of the total cost, with the PPP model coming out to be offering more value for money than provincial, conventional procurement or the shared mechanism. And basically that lies in the type of risks that's retained by DCS or by an institution when it undertakes such a procurement, things like maintenance, life cycle costs, etc., that are all included in the PPP model. So, but just basically on that, once the feasibility then made or concluded on the recommendation, the process then going forward was to put together output specifications and to go through into the procurement process of requests for qualifications. There was five companies that submitted a request for qualifications, and four were shortlisted. They then received tender documentation in terms of the request for proposal process, on which they responded, and the bids came in, I think it was the 29th of May in 2009. Subsequent to that process, there's been a policy review that was undertaken by the department, and there's been interaction with those shortlisted bidders in terms of that policy review, and we're currently in a process where we, once the evaluation starts, we're able to see how we can address those key issues taken up from the policy review. I think at this stage, before Tumi makes his recommendations, I just think one should note at this stage that the evaluation is something that needs to get urgent attention in terms of going forward to see what we've got and where we are in terms of that process.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention the thing just in conclusion and in summary to say to people that the issues around value for money, the issues around risk transfer, and the issues around affordability are critical. But in the simplest of terms, the way we see it, there's two ways of doing things, right? And in all of them, they include the private sector. So the private sector is included. So if we say we do what we call a conventional procurement, what do? We start, we decide this is what we want to do. We go and employ an architect. He designs a facility. Then we issue a tender for that, for the design. Then we finish. Then we go and call the guy who does construction. We issue a tender for construction. He constructs the building. You know, the construct, he brings in the electricians, he brings in all of these people we pay. Then we occupy the facility. Then something gets broken. You know, then we call public works or somebody to come in to fix the thing. Right. So in all of that, the private sector is involved because all of those contracts are going to the private sector. So that's a fundamental way. That's how we do business in a conventional way. Now, The point about it is that historically and lessons in economics and in government would say if you are to involve somebody else other than yourself in the things that you must do, then you should be realizing more benefits for that than what you're doing. So in a PPP, so in a sense, government should be employing maybe an army of 2 million people who all do buildings, who do all of these things. But they don't. We go to the private sector via tendering process and include all of that. It is not different in a PPP. It's not different. We go out to the private sector. The only difference here, and that's where the value for money discussion comes in, is that on a day-to-day basis, those of us who occupy buildings, public buildings, you'll find that when you go into a building, in a hospital, for example, or in a prison, something gets broken. You call the maintenance guy. He says, you see, the guy who built this thing built it wrong. You are supposed to have put it there. As a result, it's going to cost you 300 rand to fix it. If you had put it there, it was going to cost you 150. Right? You are stuck with the maintenance guy. The design guy is gone. The construction guy is gone. They're all gone. They've all made their money because you did issue a tender for all of them. So they've made their money, they're gone. Right? What we're trying to do in a PPP is to say, we want the guy who designs to sit with the guy who knows facilities management, to sit with the guy who knows how to build, right? So that it's a team of people that I anticipate that in the life of the project as a user, I think I don't want to have a situation where something goes wrong and they blame each other and no one is there, you know? The guy blames the builder, the guy who puts in the tile blames the builder, the guy who cleans blames the guy who puts in the tile, and all of those sorts of things. And my operation costs are higher as a result of that. So we say design, all of you come together. So when you come together, you're accountable to one another. It's an internal accountability mechanism in the thing. That's what we're trying to enforce, to say it's an internal accounting mechanism. So the guy who designs talks to the guy who's going to construct and say, if I design the building this way, will it work for you? Will it make your life easier? And the guy who constructs says, if I put in this kind of material, will it make it easier for you when you do the facilities management? Right? They ask those questions against one another. And we then tie them together. Right? We tie them together. We say, we'll give you this thing. But when we give you this thing, we are changing a problem because we are creating a monopoly. In a sense, you know, we bring five people together, we're giving them too much power. We're creating a monopoly. Then we then say there's a law that says when you create a monopoly, you create problems. So what do? We create a PPP agreement. So the PPP agreement, all it is an instrument to regulate the monopoly. Right? It's to regulate their power, what they can do and what they can't do. Given that we've given them the power, we still want to say we want to set limitations. And the PPP agreement function is to do that, but also to protect the things that we want to do in the first instance. So it's all about the money, because in either instances, money moves. Right? Money moves. Money moves when you do conventional procurement. Money moves when you do a PPP procurement. So money should not be part of the discussion. The reason why we would say something can be a PPP is because it's the efficiencies that we get. We gather the efficiencies of combining the different components into one process and into one procurement process. That's the fundamental issue that I think we have to capture and grapple with. That money, either way, we pay as government. And if we understand that, then we then I think that we've done the cost comparisons to show that from a cost point of view, the newer facilities are much more efficient. In terms of that, and the reason why the cost of operating the older facilities are higher, it's because of the inherent inefficiencies that I've spoken about. But the people who do the maintenance, so we wait until the ceiling actually collapses and it's on the floor, then we have an emergency to call somebody to come and fix it. And when you call somebody to fix it at an emergency price, he charges us that because he's got pricing power at the time. He gives us the high fee because he's manipulating the thing. So there's all of those sorts of things that are inherent in the thing, and that's why you end up with a cost that is comparative. Whereas when you say to the guy, your job is to maintain. It's never to ensure that the thing collapses. I don't want it to collapse because it's going to cost me a lot of money. He makes sure that it never collapses. Because if it collapses, you penalize him as well. That's the other thing that we have in the concession agreement. Is we penalize them. So it's all about behavior and the thing. It's all about the money. The money is a transfer issue. That's all, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I'll allow my colleague to raise a few questions himself before we open up to you. But there's a few things that I think we need clarity on. You know, to me, if I may call you to me, when you talk about operational costs in this meeting, it seems to me that you're talking about fixing the windows, fixing the doors, operational costs in terms of maintaining the infrastructure. That's what it sounds like. But in this PPP that you guys, not you guys, but this PPP that we are talking about, there's operational costs that affect the operations of DCS itself. It's an integral part of this PPP. And you don't seem to be factoring that in. And that is our difficulty. That, and we have it on record, that if you are talking as you are speaking now about maintaining the building and doing those type of things, and it's cheaper to do it with the public, I mean with the private sector, than to do it with DCS, we can live with that. But unfortunately, these PPPs affect even the rehabilitation of inmates that are in there, for instance. And that is the difficulty that we have. And you need to talk, that's why I'm asking the question. That's one thing that we must talk about. Are your PPPs, are they such that when you give it to the private sector, they are forced to also do the management of the warm bodies in there? Is that inclusive in your PPP operation? Or is your PPC operation only the physical brick and mortar structure? That's the first thing that we want to talk about. The second issue that you maybe must explain to us when you talk about value for money. Public Works said to us last week that conventionally a brick and mortar building has got a 25-year lifespan. And beyond 25 years, you need a major facelift for that. In this PPP that we are talking about here, we are paying Mangaung for 25 years for this thing. When they hand it back to us after 25 years, they're handing us back a shell that we will have to go and invest more money to bring it back up to speed. So when you talk value for money, I want you to explain that. And that is why we've asked Public Works to come here, so that they must either agree or disagree with what you're saying, and therefore reject what they said last week, or if they insist that after 25 years, it becomes a shell that DCS must then go look for more money to fill, then for me this thing is not working. It means every 25 years we must go through this route and benefit somebody else. Then we might as well give it to government to do it. So that's the second issue I want to talk to. The third issue that I'd like you guys to explain to us is, are you now saying to us, because the previous presenter said that when you looked at these three options, it became clear that the PPP model was the best for value for money point of view. Are you saying to us that all future major constructions or mega infrastructure that we're talking about are going to go the PPP model? Or are you being selective that in certain cases you'll do the PPP model? What's the threshold for this thing? Because if you're saying it's value for money from a taxpayer, then you need to get to a point where you say any government operations going forward, regardless of whether it's correctional services or whether it's health or all those things, this is the threshold and they must all be PPPs. But we have a problem if it's only for certain people. And you do it in 2007. You allow the DCS to do their own thing in 2010 in Kimberley. You want to do it now? And later on, we might do our own thing. It can't be that we're doing these things on a willy-nilly basis. There must be a policy that is applicable across the board. So if Treasury can answer those few questions for me and whatever chairperson brings up, then we'll open it up for discussion, because these are the inconsistencies that we are picking up from the word go. I'm not sure, Baba, if there's anything you want to add, and then they can respond to that.
Yeah, thank you, Comrade. I also welcome my own comrades, because we have not had a plenary since we came back from that other process that took us away from Parliament. You know, comrades, I do think that, and maybe the dysfunction from the way we operate, I I would prefer very, very pointed question, and they be responded to. One question, one answer, so that we don't have five questions and only three are answered in very broad and vague terms, and that will not assist the process. I just want to emphasize that well, we're here because of the money, and money matters to SCOPA. If there was no money involved, we would not be here. So money is very critical and central to our work. That's why we're here. And I'm sure that the PFMA emphasizes that very point, that when it comes to the utilization of public money, economy and all these other matters come into play in terms of relevance. And I was not convinced that the last part of the input was really being very severe in terms of how we should look at the issues on the table. But I think the two points that I want to assess, that I think Comrade Smith had raised them. We're talking triple P. Is this now a government-wide policy in terms of how the construction of buildings are going to be handled? Or is this a policy specific to DCS? And if it's a government-wide policy, what is the threshold in terms of construction that should fall within the triple P? If it's DCS specific, is it that going forward, all prisons that will be constructed are going to the triple P, or there will be a pick and choose? Some will be triple P, some will be not. So that we have a context of the policy position. And once we have that, I do believe that we can then start to engage with the specific issues that comrades may raise.
Let me start with the issue around the operations, because I think it's a sensitive one. I think part of the policy review was looking exactly at this point that DCS undertook to say, is this right or not? It is not a Treasury policy position to say these things must be included or not included. It is the guidance we receive and the engagement we have. We may say from a cost and value for money point of view, it proves that it is better to do them, but if the policy review and everything else says that it should not be done, I don't think it will be up to the Treasury to dictate that position. And I think that's why we were willing and amenable to DCS as a custodian of these things, making that input. We have noted the point, and it was a discussion we had around the fact that the original bid documents had gone out, including this aspect, and therefore the option I think that we've discussed and we've engaged separately might be then to say how do we balance the two, noting DCS's interest and in terms of this thing, and noting that we've gone out of our way. I think in a brainstorming session I had with the commissioner early in the year, we then said, you know what, we might look at saying that the operation, the construction happens, the projects proceed, and the operation is only for a limited period of time. So we can vary the bid to allow DCS to build up as well. Because there's no point in saying we build. In 2 years, the facilities are built, but then there's no build up in terms of the operational side. And that talks to the issue you're raising, Chairperson, that we then said it might be an option from a strategic point of view, and otherwise that the commissioner might have to look at to then say, fine, let's say in terms of the operational side, right, outside of the hard facilities management, we shorten that period, even that that's how we've gone out. And maybe in the future then say, if we are going to do these things, then maybe we just take a policy principle that says they shall not include those things. That is the preference. And I think we in the Treasury would not say, well, you must do it. So I think that's the answer, Chairperson, is that we never said that's how it should be. We never set the law. So there is that opportunity. So there is a difficulty, as I said, in terms of saying the bid went out along those lines. But that's a technical issue that we can handle, and I think we have a solution to that it can be handled, and our proposal would be a midpoint between the two to balance the interest. To say in respect of this, we will set up a time frame that says the operations will still be handled by the private sector, but then it will allow TCS a program that says at year 10 or year 5 or year whatever, they will take over the function. And when they take over the function, they should be ready with the following things, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And in there, we can build in transitionary measures and all of those sorts of things that will help us to achieve that process. So I think that's one. And I think not being conclusive, our early engagement, albeit rather informally, with the private sector people who've bid, I think they are amenable to something like that. It's just a detail that we have to work out on a principle basis.
I mean, just before you move on, I note you, Minister, just on this one, because this is probably the most critical one for us. And if you don't want to respond to it, then it gets respond to at a political level, maybe the Minister can do it. You know, I'm on record of saying the Constitution says custody is the responsibility of the state. That's what the Constitution says. You coming to us now and saying, hand over that custody for 10 years. That's what you are saying to us. Hand it over for 10 years. And earlier on, one of your presenters said that, well, look, there might be perceptions internationally and otherwise. You know, the market might have these perceptions that you sent out a tender, and now you want to do a review and so on. And those are part of the considerations that you took into place. So the question I guess that I'm asking, and you don't have to respond to it, but maybe the Minister must respond to it. I'm just talking purely from a economic point of view and your own point of view. If it came to the point that politicians said, we don't want this thing outsourced at all, because it's our decision, it's not your decision. If we say we don't want the custodianship of these people to be outsourced at all, what would the fallout be? Are you saying it's... That's the question that I guess I'm asking. Because at some point we're going to get to that point where we're going to have to take a decision. Is it 10 years, is it 25 years, or is it not at all? And when we take that decision, what would the consequences be to government, to South Africa as a whole, in terms of the perceptions that you guys raised? Because I don't think we must continue to skirt around these issues. Should they file a supplement to say, look, Madon, this is the consensus issue for us. And what is the way out of this thing? If at some point we get to a point where we say this thing must be out, or is there a possibility of the way out? Aslan Daba was building it. Aslan Daba was maintaining it. But I have a serious problem with giving it over to the private sector to go and look after inmates when this thing is, I'm reading it. Chapter 35 of the Bill of Rights. Point 2E, and I want to read it. Maybe I'm reading it wrong. Minister, you'll come in later on. It says, everyone who is detained, including every sentenced prisoner, has the right, and it's got A, B, C, and E is the one that I'm talking about, to conditions of detention that are consistent with human dignity, including at least exercise and the provision at state expense of adequate accommodation, nutrition, reading material, medical treatment, and so on. That's what it's saying. Now, is this at state expense, meaning that we'll pay for it, but we're not going to be the custodians of it? I'm saying that's the type of thing that we must debate. My own view, which is political, which we'll discuss with the minister, is something else. But I'm saying this, when we look at this thing that says every inmate, it must be done at state expense. So when you come and you say, let's do it this way because it's going to be cheaper, are you playing with this part? I don't know. I'm saying we will have to get legal opinion. But I don't want Treasury to come here and do things that will flout this and flout even the department. You see, the department, to me, and I'm raising it for people to understand why we are opposed to this thing. The department, the reality to me, is the department has no control of the rehabilitation in those PPPs. Absolutely nothing. We don't know, and we can't insist that that inmate must go to school, that inmate, we don't have any of that control in there. In terms of rehabilitation, nothing at all. And you are saying to me, I must convince my colleagues here to agree to a 13 billion rand future debt. And that inmate would come out there probably worse than when he went in, if he, because I have no control in terms of his rehabilitation. For me, value for money includes all those things. It's not just about the brick and mortar. It's about those things. What type of society are we trying to build if you are doing, and I'm saying Treasury, when you go forward, and the multi-party team, including DCS and including Public Works, these are the things that affect me as a politician. These are the things that affect me as a politician, not just the rands and cents. So I think the chairperson is correct. Maybe we must ask a question, he must give us an answer, it must be interrogated, because people just answer overall broadly,
yes.
And then we walk out of here and we say there's agreement.
Yeah.
On certain issues, we must be able to isolate and say, this one, there's no agreement on it. Let's take it back. But Minister, if you could pose, I mean, input, I don't know what is the input, but these are our concerns to me. And I'm not personalizing it to you. I'm just saying these are the challenges that we have. Minister.
I wanted to follow up on your question. I'm not commenting it yet. I just wanted to pose a question to National Treasury. Having listened to the entire background, we'll talk to those issues later. But I just want to know if National Treasury is aware of the fact that the bidders, the stakeholders, actually make their money in custodial services. Right? Now, I'm saying this because there's a time when there was that kind of interaction to say that, would you reconsider? Okay? They actually made it very clear that they can give up anything else but custodial services, because that's where the money is.
Mm.
Okay? So we can take a decision here and say, okay, you build, you do this, you do. But they've actually made it very clear to us that if you take away custodial services, which really is in my view, a state function, a responsibility of the Department of Correctional Services, therefore we lose money, then there's no point in us having even considered. And this statement is in black and white. This has been made. So I'm just trying to establish, Chair, following your question, whether National Treasury is aware of this part, because he says we can actually negotiate for various and so on, but is he aware of the fact that the four, for instance, who have now been shortlisted, have made it very clear that custodial services will not budget, because that's where we make our money, that's where we earn our living.
Wow.
Let me answer the your first question, Chair, around what will happen. I think the point, the middle point, obviously, would be to say there will be issues around confidence, to say you go out to the market with something like this one, and you change it midstream. There's a thing, but I think there will be a cost to all of us in terms of that thing. I think it can be done if that's the decision that gets reached somewhere. I think it can be done. I still think there will still be value for money if in the process, just purely on the construction and the FM and other related services, if that is the case. So again, I would not be the one to dictate that this can't be done or it should be done. The point around the minister that the minister is raising is that the reason why they would say they are making their money from custodial services is because that's how they structured the consortium. Because the consortium is structured based on what goes out to the tender. So if the tender had gone out the other way, and that's why they might have that reluctance to say that's how, because that's how they've modeled their numbers and structured their consortium. So it will obviously introduce a variation, a major variation, that we would have to work on technically and say what are the implications
financially and from their side as well, and whether are we still in the same process or we are not in the same process, and the implications of that. And that's something that we might have to go away at and have a look at thoroughly. The point about a couple of years was a midpoint, and that links to the point you were raising earlier about the legislation. Chairperson, and mindful of the thing, the legislation in terms of the Custodial Act, it does allow for PPPs, and it is recognized, and it gives security. So it does allow, and noting that a PPP is a situation where one does not abdicate the accountability nor the responsibility for the service. So it doesn't mean that DCS abdicates. They're just getting somebody to do their function, that which is their function. They're getting somebody, they're contracting on it. But contracting on it doesn't mean you contract out your accountability and your responsibility. So you're still accountable. Which then also brings me to the other point you raised, Chairperson, that I think it's not an appropriate one. It's not appropriate, but I think it's something we have to address. In terms of the contract currently, the two present contracts and the ones we are going out to market, there are performance indicators and performance standards on each and every single one of the functions that needs to go out, and including rehabilitation. There's a measure that is set out to say, this is the measure, this is the performance. If you don't meet this performance, this is the penalty. So it is in there, right? The question might then be to say, how effective is DCFNR in monitoring that those things happen? But it is provided for, and TCS can access that in terms of the current contract. So it's not entirely the point that they don't have control over that. They set the standards. TCS sets the standards. They set the penalty regime in the event of failure by the private party to perform, to ensure that what they set out to do, the thing. As I said, the question might be whether are they being effective in doing that and in achieving that objective. So I think from a legislation point of view, Chairperson, I think the point is covered. In terms of my earlier background, one of the things that had happened was a debate around the very same point that you mentioned, Chair, around the responsibility of custodial services and everything, was when they first did the first two prisons, I remember they changed the act because precisely of that thing. Because there was a legal issue. And the legal issue ended up saying, well, the private sector people say, well, different interpretations, and they ended up setting up in the Custodial Act that this is allowed for. Right? And the issue around the payment, the fiscal obligation of government to pay, right, to pay for the contract and for the services, means that we are still paying for it as per the requirement of the Act. So I think the legal issue, you can take comfort that was looked at, and it was looked at thoroughly, and I think in the Custodial Act allows for that to happen. That was a matter that was done. So I think the back to the earlier discussion around the buildings being a share, which is what Public Works issue raised. I would like to say that I don't want the situation where we come here and disparage colleagues in terms of this process. It's a rather not right situation. But I think if you build an infrastructure, the life you get out of it is not a function of the fact that you've built it. The life you get out of it is a function of how you maintain it as well. That is why we have heritage buildings. That's why you go to all these wonderful palaces in the world, you still find them in tip-top condition, even if they're 100 years. And the function of that is the function of how well you maintain the building. Now, the one thing we are terrible at as government, which is one of the value for money drivers, one of the things we recognize we are terrible at as government is maintenance. We don't do maintenance very well. And that's why our buildings will last 25 years, because we don't do maintenance very well. And one of the things we put into these contracts is to say that there shall be regular maintenance. On an annual basis, there shall be, at the end of the contract, 25 years, we say the building should be in such a state that it has a useful life of 5 to 10 years. So even after you leave, we still want 5 years left. In year 18, we do a survey of the building to see whether it will meet that condition. When it doesn't meet that condition, we put money aside. From the money we are supposed to pay you, we put money aside. We withhold the money to be able to do that refurbishment ourselves. So it's not these things we've taken, we've thought about them, and the buildings go beyond that. So we've planned for that, for the thing in the beginning. Of course, if you plan for a building that it, after 25 years it has zero value, you will achieve that. It's a function of how you plan and how you maintain it. You know, like the people in the private sector who are property developers, that's the perspective they take. They say, I build a mall, in 20 years, I'm gone. I've made all my money. So I don't have to spend too much money maintaining this, because it will be a shell in 20 years. Right? But if I say I want to build something and I want it to be here for 100 years, then I will build in the maintenance in such a manner that it gets 200 years. Will there be opportunities where I have to spend a lot of money? Yes, there will be. And I will spend that money. The good thing here, in the process, is because we plan for it from the beginning, the cash flows are such that they allow for that. So even if you see the financial models, you'll see that in different years, people provide that in year 7, there'll be major maintenance, they provide for that. And the unitary payment that we are paying provides for that. But as I said, how do we then hold them accountable to make sure that it happens? By way of contract, but in the contract we have those provisions. So I just wanted to clear that thing as well, Chairperson, that there isn't the notion that the thing, and it may be a function of a different perspective of how public works approaches things, as vis-a-vis how we approach them here. And I'm not saying they are wrong or right, it's just a question of a perspective of how you do things. But certainly it is possible, and we've seen it all over the world, that buildings last for 400 years. The question around the policy, whether DCS, this thing applies to DCS and it doesn't apply to other people, I think there's a discussion and a thing that is happening right now, and a policy document that is being designed, which is going to be called for mega project. Right? The mega project will set an amount, and I can't tell you the amount because we have not set it out now. But the essence of the policy, Chairperson, says that for government, all capital projects worth a certain amount must undergo a process, a feasibility study of sorts. Right? And as I said, my point earlier was that for us to then say it's a PPP or not a PPP, it's not necessarily, it's about the funding and the transfer of money and how you contract, so that everybody will be will fall within that framework, all major capital projects. So there is a policy to that. So it's not something that discriminates against DCS. It's something that's going to affect everybody. I think it's all part of the process now. It's going to be combat, and it will, I think, during at the right appropriate time, the relevant parliamentary structures will be briefed about it. But that's the effort. So it's not sitting outside DCS. And I think right now there is an instinct, but also an issue based on the experience of some of the PPPs that are done, especially around buildings, that we then say to people, why don't you explore this option? Because we think it's worked better. But the issue is that it's a discriminatory thing to have it that way, you're right? And there's an address, a point to address that from a policy point of view, to then say everybody must fall into that. I think I've covered most of it, unless some colleagues want to add.
Chairperson, I just want to add also that...
Can we do this? I'm not sure, I might be disorganizing my chairperson. No. I think the response has been more than enough to give comrades a sense
on the questions that were raised. So maybe let us give comrades the opportunity to raise whatever issues they have and give responses that are quite pointed. All right. Let me see, Comrade Makagula. It's you, and then it will be Steele, and Matlaji Singh, and then your comrade. But please, comrade, just ask a question, and let it be responded to, and then move to the next person.
Hello. Chairperson Ombambe Ngunzi, the chairperson has already asked a lot of the questions, and including the question that I was want to ask. So I will draw.
Okay, thanks. Still?
Thank you, Chair. This question, as I'm sure you will appreciate, comes from a distinctly scoper type perspective, and it relates to the issue of the conflicts of interest, possible, real or otherwise, that might exist between past and present members of the DCS staff and members of the private consortia that are actually bidding and running in these PPPs. And I'm thinking here particularly of the problem that has arisen in other contexts in the world where you have private contractors doing the work of the state and making a great deal of money out of that process. And I want to know, not necessarily from the Treasury, but probably from the DCS, what measures have they put in place to ensure that their past and present staff are not working towards the day when they can become private contractors rather than serving in their public capacities? In other words, what sort of restraints of trade are there in place? How are these preferred bidders vetted to see that they do not have present and future employees of the DCS? I'm very worried about the management of the contract, this conflict of interest. Thank you, Jim.
All right. Maybe let's park that question. Let's focus our questions more to National Treasury. I'm sure if we have time, I would allow for the department to respond, but at this stage, can we be pointed to the presentation that was made by Treasurer Mangen? Matladi is coming. He's here on the list. All right.
Chairperson, thank you. I wanted to ask the department something, but you say we should be.
Yeah, no, I wanted to talk to the presentation. Matladi. And then when Meg Singh.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is pertaining to a matter of procedure. When Treasury presented, they kept on saying it's not us, it's them. They went out and engaged without consulting Treasury. Now my question is, what does the law say about the decision that is taken by a department that would concern high costs without going through Treasury? And have you revisited that law? What did you do at Treasury when you realized that the department had gone out to do something that is costing us the billions that we're talking about today without consulting you? And actually, I'm asking you, what is your advisory role as Treasury? Couldn't you have advised to say, this is not the right way, this is the right way? Couldn't you have stopped the process itself before it could have gone too far? That is my question.
All right, thank you. Can you respond to that?
I think you, what you're referring to, madam, is the situation before with the Eddie prisons in 2000. And I think what happened was clearly the lessons learned from that resulted in the establishment of the PPP unit number one and in the provision of Treasury Regulation 16, which sets out the procedure so that after those early projects, we then set up a process and a treasury regulation that says you shall now come, you shall register the project, you shall do X, the following, all of the other processes. So the current four projects have been done in accordance with the law, and they've been done in accordance with the revised procedure. At the time when they did the first two, there was no regulation, and the regulation was set up to correct that one. Because remember, I said there were two phases of the evolution. It was that before, for the centurion and the other process.
Okay. Oh, that's fine. That's fine. I think the point has been adequately made. Wenya?
Thank you, Chairperson. The question is coming from Correctional Service Portfolio Committee, ANC. Treasurer, can we indicate whether the government cannot do without properties? Second chair, the treasurer said the PPP, it was not a treasury position. It was a position from OOP. Because we have called you today, because we have been told that these properties have built because there was no money. Therefore, the treasurer is the one that who gave us this advice of building this properties. So, namhlanje akufaki bhokwe. Who is who? Another question, Chair. Is this 25 years contract that you are talking about? Can you explain to us? Because why I'm asking this is because most of the DCS officials have run away from our centers and go to this and go to join this triple piece. Why?
What?
Can the treasurer also indicate if DCS has under expenditure? In 2001 and 2002, if yes, how much was that? Thank you, Chair.
What? Can we respond to
the? I'll leave the question on expenditure and expenditure to my colleagues from public finance. They'll answer that one. The question was whether can we do or we do without PPPs is a bigger macroeconomic question. And the answer to that is, I think we have a situation where we need massive investment in the economy. We need to build infrastructure. We need to build a lot of infrastructure. The debate is then how do we finance that infrastructure? My sense is that within the fiscal space, the available government resources, we will take 200 years to reach where we need to get. If we need to grow the economy at the rate we need to grow, we need investment. But the money we have, after we've spent money on all the other things that are also critical, welfare and all related things, is such that it will not allow us to spend and to speed up the relevant and the amount of infrastructure that we need. So the option is then to say, how do we leverage the money we have and to attract other investment into the thing? So for me, the choice is whether we want a slow kind of investment based on the kitty that we have, or we say, how do we use the kitty that we have to bring in more people and to bring in more investment? So that's the sense, in a sense, that's the thing. And I'm not saying choose one way or the other, because it's not my choice to make. I'm just putting the option. I'm not want to make the moral political question. I think that from a technical answer, that's the answer I can give you. I do think there is benefit, but I do think that there's also obligations to regulate and regulate properly. And I think that's why we have a unit like ours to then say, in the event something like that happens, how do we regulate and how do we protect government interests? The in terms of the processes, the earlier project, the first two, as I said, it was a program called APOPS that was run by DCS and Public Works. on building infrastructure that they were exploring. So they were done within that process. Treasury only came in later when they were faced with the resource issues that they needed the money, and we came in. And then subsequent to that, we set up the unit and we set up a regulatory process. So currently, the point about it, Madam, is that we said, let's undertake a feasibility study. And let us do the feasibility study and show whether it's value for money or not value for money. So I don't think to say that, you know, if we are faced with making budgetary decisions around whether we should do this thing or we should not do this thing, whether we should invest the money this way or not invest the money this way. If we say to a department, we think it's better that you do this thing as a PPP, not because we think that's fine, but we think given the fiscal space, maybe that's an option to explore, and other efficiencies to explore. And again, I'm mindful of not making moral judgments, and I'm mindful of being the issue to address the issue that says, that seems to say that we are the ones that impose a decision on people. I don't think that's a correct reflection of things. You know, I think very often as a treasury, we sit at the tail end where it's so easy to blame the treasury for everything. You know, the fact of the matter is that infrastructure is required, right? And that infrastructure is required by DCS, but health requires the same infrastructure. Education requires the same infrastructure. So infrastructure requirement is much broader. So we're just trying to balance the things, and those recommendations are made within that context. That's fine. That says we can wait, build one prison.
All right. Okay.
For 5 years.
Okay. Okay. Next. Oh, the budget.
Sorry, the 2001 and 2 spending figures we provide, we don't have. I just wanted to add something. Every year, the medium-term expenditure framework goes out to departments, and it sets out requirements and parameters for mega projects. Projects exceeding a certain set amount, they require compulsory feasibility study. The reason is that, as we have seen in the presentation, we have made many mistakes as government in terms of the procurement of infrastructure. The very Kimberley prison was contracted for 631 million, and we spent 961 million. We don't know why. You spoke of Cockstadt prison. I mean, we can't blame the people. My dad was one of the I was there. Cockstadt prison. It was built for a certain type of prisoner, and was built in Cockstadt. After it had been finished, there was no bulk meat supply. I mean, if the certificate was done, we would have known that. So it remained empty for a long time. And after that, it also remained empty because we didn't know actually who are these prisoners we have there. That was the minister at that time. I'm not saying kind of minister, it was. When I'm checking now, the occupancy rate is at 7%. That is at the 28th February 2011. 537 prisoners out of 1,044. That is the figures I have. So what I was saying is that this study also covers the needs. That's why it's not saying to private PPP. It actually tells that what
were in for. Okay. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to park this with the Minister when she replies. In my view, that something like this, the triple P, is something which is as a result of a political decision. And if not so, I would love to hear from the Minister why is it that, if it was not a political decision, why are we sitting with triple P's?
The other point is in value for money, okay, in my view, is twofold. The one is infrastructure, the other one is outcomes, outputs. So I just want to hear from Treasury. Having said that, they give all these buildings to private sector. What is the cost? Take, for example, Kimberley one. And you say, okay, we are building the same center, but not through the consortium. What is the cost difference between the two? Going to be, yeah. And the other one is the outcomes. Are we monitoring the outcomes in terms of the white paper, the objectives of the Department of Correctional Services, to see whether these facilities really, you know, adhere to those targets with regards to, specific regards to rehabilitation? Is there any yardsticks? What is the baseline? And before we proceed with other projects, whether this is real value for money? Then the management of the cost involved in triple P's. Does it include the stone and water thing and the management of officials, the salaries and stuff? And how does it compare also the management thereof in terms of our correctional services? And you are referring to the Custodial Act. I would love to be advised to which provisions are you referring to, because we can't have a situation, and I support the chairperson, where we as a government don't have control over people who are citizens of this country. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think questions that would require correctional service to answer, I think National Treasury should not venture into that, but I think there are issues around value for money arising out of feasibility study that I think you can respond to.
Thanks. I think the feasibility study looked at, the current ones certainly looked at including both the operations and the thing, and we still found that there's value for money. And it was issues related to salaries, accommodation, in terms of the packages that are currently offered by DCS that would, in the ordinary, the private operators would not offer in terms of their salary packages and the things they offer. So there was value for money from that point of view in terms of just the cost. I think the outcome issue is an issue we touched on earlier, that it is part of the thing, and how the outcome was that it gets set. We will then say this is the standard. There's a standard set, and against that standard, there should be a performance measure, and there should be a penalty linked to that failure to the thing. So that's how we protect the outcomes, at least in theory, in terms of the stuff.
That's fine, and that has to be managed by correctional service, not by National Treasury. See?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm just trying to understand the role of Treasury here. and just to follow up on Honourable Masadi and Gwenya. Is I want to know, where does the buck stop in terms of responsibility and overruns and overcapitalization? We've heard that the first two projects, prison projects, Treasury had an arm's length relationship, from if I understand you correctly. But in all the other projects, you have a direct bearing on what happens. So does that mean if anything goes wrong with the second four projects, we hold you accountable for any over expenditure and anything that goes wrong? And in the first two, you're saying it's not you, it's DCS. Because if it is DCS, then I'm sure the Portfolio Committee needs to interrogate who in DCS was responsible for these outrageous conditions in the contract, which now binds government, this government, into the future, 10, 20 years into the future. That is something we need to know. But I think we need clarity on that. If you're saying it's not you, not you, then we go to DCS, and that's the Portfolio Committee's responsibility. The second question, Chairperson, is, I was not going to ask this question of Treasury, but Mr. Mbatha says, and he's used the Kimberley example, and if you look at the presentation of Treasury, there's a Cockstead example. If you look at Malmesbury, there's outrageous overruns in terms of capital expenditure there. 142%, 155%, 155%.
And Treasury says, we don't know why. The money comes from Treasury. Has Treasury condoned this over expenditure by GCS? Because they've got to come back to Treasury and say, listen, we've overspent. We don't have the money. Can you give us more money? Has that been condoned? And secondly, I'd like to know, Chairperson, because Treasury told us that they look at all the documents and everything else. I mean, how can we have architects, engineers, and everybody else who probably provide an estimate for the cost of a construction of a prison or a school or what have you, to come back later and say, no, well, you know, we forgot that we have to dig drains here, or we have to do A or B or C. Escalation we can understand. But civil works, a major thing like civil works, which costs 40, 50, 100 million rand more, I mean, how can that be ignored? Shouldn't they be taken to task as people that have been contracted to provide an engineering service to a department, either to public works or to DCS?
Can I just add to that? I think when you respond to it, I think the question that is coming out from many people here, including what Mr. Singh has now said, is Treasury playing an advisory role or are you playing an advocacy role? You know, when you sit here, it's almost as if you are lobbying for the PPPs. So I want to understand, does DCS come and say, I want to build four prisons, and you say that there's an option one and an option two, or are you the one that's going to say, gee, now we think that this is the best? That's just what I'm asking, because my sense, and if that is my sense and it's wrong, I'm willing to accept it. But my sense that I got from this presentation is that you are almost playing an advocacy role. And what is your intention, or what was this PPP unit that you set up? What is its major function? Is it to advise government departments, the user departments, or are you regulating Comanzella, which is the one? If you could answer that over and above what has been asked by other people, because I think that is the overriding principle for me.
Chair, there's two roles that the unit plays. The one is the regulation, and the other one is advisory. Regulation and the two are linked, because the regulation sets out what processes you have to follow. You have to undertake a feasibility study, what must be in the feasibility study, what are the issues for government, and all of those sort of things. That's the regulation, the regulator rule. But because the regulation is a bit complex and the thing, the unit also plays an advisor role based on saying that not every department does a project like this every year. So you do find that the experience doesn't revive. So the PPP unit has a residence of the experience, where we then can then say, based on our experience on the previous project, this is what has happened, and this is how we should do it. So it's more from an improvement point of view. So it's certainly not an advocacy role.
Can we check in relation to the very issue of this current four projects?
Yes.
Have you advised DCS what you think might be the best option, or have you instructed them on what you think is the best option?
What has happened in terms of the current process is that DCS registered the project in terms of Treasury Regulation 16. There was a feasibility study undertaken. There were the results of the feasibility study. The results of the feasibility study that said this is the way to go, and DCS has gone to procure to the market to do that. So the responsibility is always the responsibility of the accounting officer of the department.
Okay.
It's not the accounting officer of the National Treasury that does this thing. The accounting officer of the National Treasury. We regulate and advise.
No, that's fine. I'll follow up a question to the department based on your response later. Okay, you want to respond to what the Honorable Singh had raised?
I think the point Honorable Singh is raising is a point well taken. That and it's in the context of the earlier discussion that because in the past that's one of the reasons why there's so much leakage is that people do projects, they do them in a hurry, and when things are done in a hurry, things get missed. And the reason why these things get missed is because there are no feasibility studies, and there's no one to hold accountable. So somebody comes and says, we want to do a building. They then say, okay, fine, let's find an architect. The architect comes and designs the building. He doesn't look at the size, he doesn't look at the conditions, he doesn't look at all of it. He designs, he gets the contract for the design. He delivers the drawing, he walks away.
You see, then somebody comes and says, no, let's construct. There's a tender for construction. So there's no relationship. So there's also a difficulty in holding people to account to one another.
Okay.
And there's a rush to spend. So that was that's the issue. And I think that's why the principle around the policy that says there must be feasibilities for all the mega projects is to try and address those sorts of things as well. And to see that when we contract appropriately. That we don't make the mistakes in the contract.
Paliso, and then Hoshi, and then yes, you complete. And I'll then take maybe the last three, and then we start to say what shape do we give it. It will be. Yeah, no, yours. It's part for now. I see three comrades. Yes, comrade.
Thank you, Chairperson. It is very clear that Treasury is telling us they are approving funds for PPPs at the cost of the security of this country. Because I don't want the person who is answering us here to generalize PPPs for departments. We are talking prisons here. Talking prisons, I'm a portfolio committee member from DCS. And from where I'm sitting, I'm well informed, very well informed what is happening in Malawi and in Kutafa. Currently, the current situation. And funds were approved by Treasury. The security of this country is compromised because of the state coffers fund. And here we are directly told, because you are telling us you are going to proceed. I want you to answer us. Tell us whether is Treasury going to proceed with these PPPs while there are concerns from all the members. The answer of Honorable Umamu Matladi was not answered. I can't place whether is Treasury advising us to agree that these PPPs must be built. Here, Chairperson, there is no growth path out of these answers coming from Treasury. I hear they are talking about the economy. There is no growth path because there is no job creation for the people of this country out of these PPPs. And these PPPs of Kutama and Mangaung, especially the Kutama one, Sintumule, it's internationally owned. People who can't even communicate with the inmates. They are talking a language that the inmates are not able to hear what these people are saying. How sure are we that there are no human rights abuse in that prison? Because we've got no control about those prisons. So I don't want to mention many things here, wasting time. But I want to say Treasury is really wasting our time here, Chairperson, because they are not directly answering the members what the members are asking. So I don't want to even to ask more questions. My one question is, are we going to compromise the security of this country?
Okay. Thank you, Congress. Yeah, can I get a response?
I can't answer that question, Chairperson, in all honesty, because I think it's a question DCS should answer. It's a political question, and it's a political question that the ministry and DCS should answer, whether they are proceeding or not proceeding with the things. Our role, as I said, is to facilitate and advise.
Okay.
If the choice is made that for other reasons the projects must not proceed, it's not our choice to make.
Sure.
It's not the Treasury's choice to make. And I think I'll be, you know, it's a political discussion, and I'm not here mandated to be able to engage in that kind of discussion and to answer some of the issues that you raise.
Great. I think the chairperson from the very beginning made that point, and I'm sure comrades would seek to be mindful of that the Treasury officials are here to deal with technical issues. As for the political elements, a way will be worked out to deal with those. Yes, comrade. Then
you.
It will be no Hosh. No, it's Hosh. And then after Hosh. But if it's going to be a follow up that they will not be able to answer.
This is a simple one. Chairperson, mine is that as she was talking, I'm listening to her. She wants to find out if in future there is a project like this. Is Treasury still going to fund it? Can they maybe advise the department what to do about such a thing? Thank you.
I think what he said was that it is not for National Treasury to make a determination. It's for DCF, and I would imagine that that would apply to all departments. That's why Comrade Smith asked whether are they playing an advisory role or an advocacy role. But I'm sure if there's anything beyond what he has said, or you want to clarify something specifically on that question, I can give you the platform.
Yeah, I just want just to say there are two processes that one will play such difference. There is the advisory role, which is played by the PPP unit. But also, there is the budgetary role. And the budgetary role is driven by the politicians themselves, the Ministerial Committee on Budget. So, that's why the President, in his State of the Nation address, when he was mentioning the projects that are going to be delivered during the year, I think the previous two State of Nation address, he mentioned that some of these projects will be delivered through public-private partnership projects.
I wanted to talk more on your own.
I just refer to what the Toby said, that the availability of resources comes to the question how to fund a project. That's what he was saying.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think we are caught up in a situation that we are not sure who should answer this particular issue. Particularly that sitting where we are now, we are disadvantaged that we don't have the content of the contract that has been signed by the DCS and the contractor, which of course the Treasury had a role to play in terms of advice. Obviously, Chair, you would understand that the PFMA has a responsibility that is posed into the Treasury to say, you have a role to advise a department when dealing with issues relating to budgetary. And in this regard, it found the Treasury failed that particular responsibility. Because from the inception they said, they alleged to say DCS could not, consult them. They were then came on board when things were already falling apart. And then coming on that, the question then becomes the issue of quality assurance. Quality, and monitoring of the process. When will this particular contractor observe whether the contractors are delivering what was supposed to be delivered within a reasonable cost? The concern that was raised from the beginning by the chair of DCS, it looks like the issue of escalation of costs are reaching a level where you cannot leave it going without, attended to. Now, the question is, in the contract, is there any provision that can, risk the department out of that without, worsening the situation in terms of monetary and so on? If that particular provision is there, Chair, what are the likelihood of utilizing that particular provision and find a way of releasing the department from this particular thing that is going to, it's supposed to go for 25 years, but the escalation is becoming out of proportion
We cannot sit here, Chair, and then said, indeed, we are realizing that we are going to lose so many billions, but we feel because we have, there's nothing that we can do. I'm not sure, but if we can get what are the contract provide in case quality assurance is, you know, tempered with in terms of, you know, funding and so on and so on, that can help us. But I think Treasury here should have been coming, knowing that they should be able to say, indeed, they should have been confirming whether there is money that we are spending unnecessarily or not. They seem not to be there, which makes us to start doubting. Are they part of advising us, or are part of the contractor which, you know, it's reading out our government of the money? You know, this area needs to be very clear. Treasury is the most important, you know, tool for this government. It should play a very, very serious advisory role in advising department when coming to budgetary. But they sound to be they've parked somewhere, and then they're not sure whether should they tell the truth or not. They're just saying, DFC, you'll take a decision. But they don't give them the scale of flow of money that we are going to lose as government. Thank you.
I want to check whether you...
Chairperson, I think there are two things to say to that. The money that's going to be spent in the future, as identified, is tied to an infrastructure and it's tied to services. So the calculation of the money going forward is money that is tied to the infrastructure and to the thing. So it's not money that's being wasted. I don't think it's fair to say that money is being wasted. It's tied to the payment for the infrastructure and for the payment of the services. The other issue was that there is a termination provision in the agreement. It comes at a price, though, and there's a calculation that has to be worked out. If the agreement gets terminated, there's a provision because people have invested their money and the funding at the time. So they need to be protected, and the termination provisions provide for that to protect them. So they will then demand their rights in terms of that provision. If it's in
Chair, I would want to believe that particular protection should not be one sided. Government in that particular clause should have been also been considered to be protected, to say in case that they're becoming, you know, exorbitant, that the government is losing so much in a manner that it cannot be, tolerated. It should find a way. But it looks like the concern here is the contractor have invested too much money. But we are forgetting that government, it has invested and it will continue to invest. And again, from this response, Chair, I'm starting to wonder whether the portfolio committee the analysis, is it the correct in terms of what they're saying? Because they're saying the money that we are talking about is only for infrastructure. It does not go to the operational. We need to be very clear as to what exactly are we talking about. Is it both operational expenditure and...
Yeah, no, he said infrastructure and operation. So both are covered.
I said both are covered in my presentation. And I think the point about it is we did say that the contract as it stands will anticipate performance standards that must be met. And if they are not met, there's obligation. So it's not fair to say that what we're saying is that the same protects the private sector only. There's insufficient protection for government. That if government is not getting the value for money that is required, there are procedures in the agreement that government can invoke. So there's enough protection for government. The contract is balanced. That's what our role is to try and ensure that the contract is balanced to make sure that both parties are taken care of. And it is.
Okay, all right. Yes, Comrade.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got three questions. My first question is that it is a serious concern that CS officials who were involved with the current contractor. I am employed by the private prisoners, the very same official. And what is government doing concerning this thing? They come from DCF, they go to the PPP prisoners. My second question, I just want treasurer to clarify this to me, because it's the treasurer who approved the very same project. For consortium, equals the consortium, Sizabantu, South African Custodian Management, Umja Netuwa Consortium. Who are these people? Some of them are ex-officials of the DCF. Most of them, some of them I know them. Because when we went to SIM 2, some of them are working there already. They are having senior positions there in Kudama. And my second question, another concern with PPP is that most of the offenders are serving long prison terms who will not benefit from the state of the act facilities such as juvenile or even women offenders. Why are these centers only for long term? Why can't we have for females and juveniles so that they can get the rehabilitation there? They are not there. My third question, the lesson we have learned from the current PPPs, that DCS put too much specifications in the current PPPs. And if, as a result, it becomes expensive to build and operate those prisoners. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. Sorry, on the point of order, my question has now been asked three times by three different members. Can we actually get an answer to it?
Well, I've said that we'll park that, and once we're done with National Treasury, maybe the department can be at liberty to respond. So if comrades can just not repeat that question, because I will not respond to that. Now, Mama, around the consortium, maybe it must be answered from behind National Treasury. And I'm sure it is an area of interest that we may not necessarily want to go into here and now, but it definitely is an area of interest that might need to be looked at. And I would say that I don't know if they would want to respond, but I'm sure a lot of the operational measures really should be taken to the Department of Correctional Services. The key question for National Treasury is the feasibility studies that they have done and the advice that they've put on the table in relation to how these four projects should be run, whether they should be done the conventional way or whether it should be PPP. I think that's it. But if you would want to react to what she has said, you are at liberty, but I would want to protect you and move to the next. And hope that DCS has noted the issues that are raised, because operational matters must be taken there. Comrade Tele, Comrade Abrams, and then Mashian. And then we'll see how we...
The point of order, Chair.
No. That has been taken care of. Yes, Comrade.
The Chair.
Just hang on a minute. Yes, Comrade.
Yes, Chairperson. There is a direct question to the Treasurer that has been asked by the previous speaker. And then I think also, Chair, it will be fair that you allow the treasurer to respond. Thank you.
Which are the specific questions or three questions that or issues that you raised?
Around the output specification? I think that's the one we can deal with. And the answer there is that yes, we have taken account of those in the current feasibility study. There was a long and detailed process of comparing the previous output specification and trying to make sure that we don't repeat the same mistakes in the current one. So that part of the work has included that exercise. Now, as in response, I said the current feasibility study did take into account the lessons learned from the previous one. So the output specifications as they currently stand, and that as we currently reviewed, reflect those lessons learned. I think on the question of the offender profile, it's something that we also advised DCF to say that one of the benefits of having such infrastructure is that we might have to relook at the offenders. And I think we've done a lot of work around how we accommodate women and those sort of things in the current projects. Okay. So those points have been taken care of.
Oh, that's fine. But you see, comrades, those specifications, they are done by DCS, not by National Treasury. So even that question still had to be answered by DCS, because they do the specifications, not National Treasury. Yes, comrades.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Police has covered me, but I wanted to find out from Treasury. I'm seeing here expenditure until 31st of March 2011, that already the expenditure is 15,782,000. If we talk of the value for money, by the time we award the tender, what will be the expenditure of these PPPs? Because I think the value for money is very important when we talk about this thing. I want to check how much will it be? Because as we speak now, it's 15 million rand. On the 31st of March, it's 15 million. Thank you.
I don't think that way. I think DCF can also assist in this, because but what I know, the expenditure for specific studies, the department appoints transaction advisors to do this research and discuss that money before the actual PPP agreement is signed. But I'll ask my colleague to explain this later. You could just explain what this 15 million you are talking about, but in principle, there are three PPP agreement expenses that are incurred by the department. That is now the cost of the advisors that they bring in to do the investigation, to do the study, etc. So maybe if you have details of those figures, then we can engage with you. We can engage with the committee, sorry.
Yes, Comrade Abram. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as custodians of the state's purse, I would like to know the following from the Treasury. In terms of the current feasibility for the four PPPs that have been planned, have they perhaps looked at what the cost would be of each of those prisons? In terms of that feasibility study, and what would their advice be to the department if they had evaluated the cost structure? Then, Chairperson, way back in 2002, there was a task team which looked at the contracts of the current PPPs, and there were certain recommendations made which have financial implications. To what extent has there been any movement with regard to those recommendations? And if there has been any movement, and what was the Treasury's view on that? Chairperson, I'm a guy that talks about hard facts. I'm not into all these technical things. And what Treasury is trying to tell me is a bit too technical. I want to talk about facts. The facts are that the department had a prison built in Kimberley, which was taken into use early last year. It had a 3,000 bed capacity, and in terms of standards, it may not perhaps match the five-star standards of the two PPPs that were built. But the standards, to my mind, are extremely good and high. The cost, we believe, at the end of the process was 960-odd million. And in the 2011-12 financial year, the operational cost, and I must admit, although it was a 3,000-bed facility, there were 2,400 inmates. The operational cost was 85 million rand. My question to you is, how can we justify, on the one hand, spending that kind of money on operational cost as well as construction cost, but against that, we have, for example, the amounts that we are spending. For example, in the 2008-2009 financial year, the chairperson gave us some global figures. But in the 2008-2009 financial year, our fixed contribution towards the construction cost of Mangaung was 101 million. It remains unchanged for a 15-year period, which would give you over 1.59 billion over that period. Your operational cost at Mangaung in that year was 220 million. In the last financial year for which we have figures, it was 259 million. What I cannot understand is that we come along here and we are trying to justify that the PPP route is the most cost-effective route. And I don't even talk here about the fact that at Kimberley, we're spending that kind of money and we are in charge of the entire facility. And the facility belongs to the Republic of South Africa, not to some outside quarter. And therefore, Chairperson, we want some straight answers. This business of this technicality and that technicality, the people we represent outside don't understand that technicality. They understand the fact that we are paying so much at Mangaung and at Kutuma Sintumele, and it is costing us so much at Kimberley. Now, somebody will come along and bring in some other issue. But I also want to tell you that we had a presentation for some additional toilets to be built. Toilet saga is around even in Kimberley. And there they said that those toilets will cost us, I think, 125 or 152,000 rand per toilet. I don't know if those toilets are going to be brought in from outer space. Now, what I'm asking, Chairperson, is if Treasury's role is advisory, as well as, on the other hand, keeping an eye over the state's purse, how on earth can we allow this kind of expenditure to take place? And finally, Chairperson, with regard to this whole argument that yes, you need to build in a cost structure in terms of maintenance. Chairperson, if the private sector goes out to build whatever facility, the private sector will see that it is properly costed. It will see that the overruns are minimal, that the overruns are only relevant to those issues like unforeseen circumstances. Like, for example, you hit a major rock and it needs thousands of rands to sort that out. How on earth do we allow you, as the controllers of our purse, that you allow overruns of 30, 40, 50% on a project? I think there is something gravely wrong at the way we do things. And if we believe that, for example, the Department of Public Works, they are in charge of the maintenance at all our facilities. But if something goes wrong, a tap gets broken, oh no, there must be now a works order, and there must be this, and there must be that, and the other. How do we allow these things to happen, and we have these massive costs in terms of maintenance that we are settled with. There must be other innovative ways of doing things. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. I want to revert to you and check if there's anything you'd like to respond to. But yeah, I see you, Comrade, at the back. I had already said Comrade Mashiala will be the last, but I know in FOCA there is injury time. I'll allow you, Comrade Mashiala. Or maybe let me do this. Let's keep Comrade Mashiala and I'll give you Comrade, and then they can respond compositely, and then the chairperson will, and then we'll see how we bring this amount to a close. Yes, Comrade.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going back to
No, you can continue. The chief is listening.
Okay. I'm going back to 2007 April experience when we had a hearing at SCOPA dealing with issues similar to what we're dealing with today. It was very clear then that there were serious problems with these types of arrangements. And seated where I'm seated right now, and very happy that National Treasury has taken over. But before they could go on and get involved, I would have expected that the capacity, the mental capacity in National Treasury would have gone back to the two buildings, two institutions linked to the APOPS program to go and find out what exactly happened there and whether at the end of the day it was worth continuing with the same type of arrangement. Though it might be different at some point. In simple terms, I'm saying, I would have expected the Department of National Treasury to do a due diligence study. We wouldn't be sitting here and being in a shouting match around this issue. Clearly to me, it says there has never been any effort to make sure that some sort of study, I don't know what you would call it, in my layman's language, I call it a due diligence. Something that has been done before that you learn from, whether it is a best practice or a bad practice, and move from there. Chairperson, I want to say in this meeting today, I don't think that there is value for money around this prison. I want to urge the National Treasury, because I heard that in the contracts there's been built in some form of wriggling out of this situation, that they must go back and go and look at how much it is going to be costing government to make sure that we get out of the situation. It's costing us a lot of money. We go every 5 years to people and say and promise them that we will better their lives. But at the end of the day, we're getting a raw deal. I don't want to go back to the involvement of departmental staff jumping ship and going into, I don't want to go into that because it's a political exercise. I want to speak on money matters, which affect all of us seated here. If there is value for money, it must be proven beyond reasonable doubt. But where I'm seated right now, and having come a long way with these types of debates, I don't think that National Treasury has done justice. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks very much, Comrade Chairperson. I'm not going to take long, Comrade Chairperson. You know, I'm listening about this thing of PPP. You know, Chairperson, it's almost 15 years I was in this committee. You know, you can talk. Tomorrow, they'll come again to say we want PPP. Truly speaking, 14 to 15 years. And I remember one day, Chairperson,
serving in this committee.
portfolio comments.
That's right, yes. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes. And, you know, one day, there were many fighting between portfolio committee and some big guys. Because I don't want name. And about this PPP. Let me tell you something. Next year they will come again. Sometimes they keep quiet. After 5 years, if there is some other new member come, then they say maybe this, they don't know, they come, they bring again. I'm telling you, I think that there is somebody behind this problem. Lastly, Comrade Chairperson, you know, 2001, we went to Belgium. It was an international parliamentarian dinner there. I was one of the delegation of South Africa. You know, it was talking about Africa and Asia, death and death. It was terrible. Now, if people that the one put us in the terrible situation, it's not right. Let's say we don't want PPP. I think my suggestion, Comrade Chairperson, if we can say 3 years, budget for 3 years, build one prison. 3 years, build one prison. We can build more prison rather than one paying so many million, 786 for two prison, which means, 786 million, which means two prison is 15.72 million per annum. It's too much. Let's say no, Jefferson. Let's say no. Stop this PPP.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. Thanks. I just want to stress that today's discussion was supposed to be at a purely technical level. Because that's what the treasury officials have come to do. As to beyond this information that they've given, what next? I think that becomes the second phase of the engagement. But I would like to... No, yeah, maybe...
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think the last three were mostly statements and views of politicians. I don't think I want you to respond to that. But thank you very much for coming, because as Chairperson Gordy said, you're not just to give us empowerment from Treasury. But there's one thing that I think you need to go away and come back to us with on Treasury. You did indicate earlier on that when these two contracts were concluded, the interest rates were high. We talk about the currency too. And there is an opportunity to go and re-look at the finance or refinance those type of things. I need you to come back and tell us, is that a possibility, and what are the benefits for that? Because those are in the past. I think for the ones that we are talking about now, because this was a means towards the end in terms of deciding these, I do think that DCS, the minister and the department, would have to decide what it is that you want to do. Really at the end of the day. Now that we've got all this, what do we want to do and what are the implications be in terms of the review, what are the cost implications, both in terms of confidence that has been spoken about or cash if we review them, the potential fallout between bidders in terms of the material changes if we go that route. So it's those type of things. But we really think that we have sufficient. We don't have to engage with it now, Minister. We'll have our own time to look at these things now that we are more empowered and see what it is that we want to do. But if you want to make a comment or two now, we would allow you to do that. We'd allow you to do that. But from National Treasury, thank you very much. But the Minister will, I'm not chasing them away. No, I'm saying they will be here. But I'm saying from our side, we will not want to engage with you on some of those things. But we really thank you for, because I think you served what we wanted to have from our side. So we will, if you can come back and tell us the refinancing, now that the interest rates have gone down, is it possible, and how much would it save us in terms of Kutumale and Mangaung? On the others, I think we will engage with the department. But let me allow the Minister to make whatever input and comments, Minister, and then if people want to respond, whether, so you don't have to run away, you are in the firing line still. Whether you want to respond or members will want to respond is fine, but we will allow the minister. It's just a moment. Okay, no, that's fine. Let's allow Chairperson Gordy and then the minister, and then if there's a need to do it, we'll do it, but otherwise, Treasury, thank you very much. I think you've empowered us. Gordy.
Yeah, I just wanted to say before the minister comes, just to re-emphasize that the reason we're here as a committee is because, as Mashiana indicated, we had interacted with this issue of the triple P's before, and I think in one of our resolutions that was adopted by Parliament, we had clearly expressed our position vis-à-vis these matters. And I remember in the hearing, we actually asked the officials of Correctional Service, what is the value of our objection in Parliament to the policy direction that you're taking? And I think at that time it was not entertained. So I just want to emphasize to Treasury, but especially to DCF, that in relation to this matter on the table, because Treasury was here to talk to these four coming projects and not on a broad policy draft. I understand they're busy with a policy perspective. I'm sure it will be engaged with at the appropriate time. But in relation to this triple P, I think our perspective as a committee is very clear. And that's why we had to put aside our own business to be here, because we felt, well, this is very important. Let's come and hear what is being said. But also, Comrade Minister, we have an intention, unless something happens, to visit your facilities, and the triple P's facilities were part of what we as a committee would like to, you know, to come and visit and have a sense of what is happening, so that we deal with the practical issues but also deal with the ideological issues. Because idealism sometimes defies logic and then wins, sometimes not. But I just wanted to emphasize that as a committee, we're not coming here being neutral and ignorant of what is happening. Our interest lies in the fact that we're yet to be convinced that maybe this is the appropriate route to take. But my sense, Comrade Chair, is that I think there's a lot of responsibility on the part of DCF. And for me, the question that has not been answered, and which, of course, maybe could not be answered, and might be answered when DCF talks, either through the minister or the commissioner, or maybe in some other meeting, is exactly what it is that they want to do in relation to this whole project. And in realizing that objective, what are the obstacles? And or what are the implications? So that we're able to zoom down on what are the obstacles in either a policy change or a policy continuation. So we're able to isolate it and say, this is the problem. If it's a technical problem, what expertise do we need? If it's a policy, it's a political problem, how do we deal with it so that there is progress? I think I would want to leave it at that conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. But let's hand over to DCS Minister and Commissioner, either of you, if you want to make any comments.
Chairperson, please allow the National Commissioner to just pick, highlight a few issues on some of the matters that have been raised by National Treasury. I'm not encouraging, but I just feel that it is proper that the Commissioner set the record straight on some of the matters that have been raised, and at the end, I'll just in 1 minute, the political position on that.
Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, thanks for allowing us to make a short comment on these matters. We have listened very carefully, and we sincerely appreciate the engagement that has brought us to this meeting so that we can have a relief with the matter that is before us. The matter of the triple P that is before us are an inheritance that both the Minister and I have taken over. And therefore, there was an engagement within the Department to review as to whether this triple P serves the mandate of the organization. And therefore, in those discussions, it was felt pertinent to take into account the importance that and the role and the amount of money that we're going to dispense as a country. You'll bear with me, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, in the presence of the National Treasury, that the feasibility study that was made in 2007 made a projection of the costs in terms of affordability between 5.3 and 6.1 billion. Those are the figures of 2007. Therefore, if you were to index those to the current figures, it will come to a higher number. That being the situation, and accepting that there will be a variation in terms of cost escalation, the issue of the debt that the state and the department will be confronted with will need to be looked into. Now, with respect to value for money, it is important also to take into account that value for money means, therefore, that Department of Correctional Services is in a position to run the facilities in the manner that is cost-effective in accordance to the law. Now, having said that, there is an issue that we want to put before the committee here, that the core mandate of the Department of Correctional Services is to rehabilitate those who offended the community. And that is the current facilities that we have. We have no role, we have no mandate. And to put it very bluntly, for us to be able to access those facilities, we need to seek permission to the administrators of these facilities. And therefore, that is disempowering. We need to put this on record that much as a feasibility study has been done in 2007, we are new into this department, and therefore we needed also to roll up our sleeves to understand the nuances and what is contained in the document. May I then quote from the feasibility study that was done in 2007, page 10 of 68, on the output specifications. It says, the draft output specification used as a basis for the feasibility study has been redeveloped based on the white paper requirements. Surely, these outputs are not linked to the white paper, because the custody of the inmate and the rehabilitation, therefore, is not taken into consideration. And therefore, we have a serious difficulty. It was on this basis that on the 23rd of July 2010, the minister, having consulted extensively within the department, and I, as the National Commissioner, we needed to convene a meeting with the bidders in order for us to put forward the position of the organization on the table. We made it very clear that we would like to plead that the variation and specifications that we would like to put into this on the documents should be reviewed. We got a response that says should the variation constitute materially, there would be a problem. And we got that in writing last year, that whatever the minister has requested, namely facilities for women, for children, mentally ill, all those aspects of custodial will constitute a material change to the paid specifications. Now, that is a problem for us in administrating the process. The issue of the length of the lease is neither here nor there. It may be 25 years, it might be 10 years. But the issue at the core here is that the department will need to plan 10 years ahead of the process. And that is a very difficult, especially taking into account that we need to be able to know what is happening in that facility. It is very difficult for us to be able to know what will be happening in 10 years, knowing, taking into account the current facilities, because those are the mirror image of what we can see happening in those facilities. Rehabilitation is core and is close to our heart. And therefore, we are saying, as it has been explained here, the security implications are very high. High in the sense that maximum inmates may be declassified as medium and brought back to us. And that is a concern that we have as a department. The country and the Republic of South Africa has given the Department of Correctional Service a mandate to create a society where the inmates, when they leave those facilities, they become members will be contributed to the economy effectively, and that the security of the country is not compromised. We have no role to that. We therefore request that an engagement be put forward, and when an issue has been raised as to whether what are the consequences if we were to withdraw out of this, I should think that's another discussion, because we need to be able as a department to be given time. We requested for an additional time to extend the validity of the bids. which will be coming to an end in October this year. I have given the minister my commitment that will constitute a multidisciplinary team of departments who will be able to evaluate. But as a back of this, evaluate against the decision of the policy review that the minister has put forward. So, as an accounting officer, I'm sitting between two extremes, which are very difficult. To continue doing the evaluation at the same time, knowing fully from the political perspective, that issues that have not been addressed adequately. And that is a concern that we need so that we can be able to move as quickly as possible to close this chapter. I'm not recommending anything. I should think it's the people of South Africa who should be able to give us direction. Because if this issue would be able to give us value for money and be able to create an environment for us that we are accountable for the inmates when they leave those facilities, that they don't go and re-offend. Those are the principles that will lead us to be able to deal with this matter effectively. I therefore want to indicate that from a cost perspective, using the very same document that says the operational budget required for each facility on 2000 would be 141 million per annum for one facility. So if we use that multiplied by 5 for that current year, it would be about 500 million. So if we use index to the CPI index to current, it might be a different figure. The same applies to average cost per offender, which was costed at 127.37 rands. That would be around 141 F 2007 figures. I should think there are issues here which we need to be able to deal with effectively. And I would like to put this on record that the minister and I and the ministry and the department as a whole would like to get clarity and assistance on this matter. Certainly, we are not here to cast aspersion, nor to put any other department under a situation wherein it becomes uncomfortable. But the fact of the matter is this, we must talk about South Africa Incorporated, about issues that affect us with respect to the issues of security. These are the core issues that we'd like to address to this committee. Thank you, Chairman.
Let's ask the minister.
thank you very much, Chair, and really I want to thank the both yourself and the Chair of Skokwan for making it possible that we are part of a discussion with National Treasury on this matter. I really welcome that opportunity. Well, you said, Chair, on the way forward, this is a matter that can be discussed later. But I do want to say this, back, Chair, that it's good to talk about investor confidence. It's good to talk about all of those things. However, I'm of the view that you need to strike a very healthy balance between your concerns around investment and investors and issues of national security. And my approach to this issue since coming into the department was that here, PPP policy, we're not against the PPP policy of government, but we certainly are saying there should have been a different approach to a PPP in the context of a security entity such as the Department of Correctional Services. Okay? Now, that's the thing that we are raising. But not only that, we must be very honest that the current outcomes are not in line with government priorities. The current outcomes are definitely not in line with the priorities of government. Government talks to rehabilitation, right, from arising from the white paper, okay? Government talks about issues of education, right? Government talks to issues of people of South Africa should feel and are safe, right? And from where I'm sitting as a Minister of Correctional Services, having been processing now the life as a result of the Constitutional Court ruling, if I may use that as an example, Chair, which is my part in short to deal, is that we've been directed that right now we should consider, right, for 405 inmates total, right, whether they are eligible for parole or not, right? And that's what we're doing. We've now dealt with plus minus 200 of those. The few from a user, the few that actually come are being recommended from the PPPs, okay? Because one of the requirements is that you need to consider whether these people have gone through psychological assessment or not. What is done, which is the trend, I'm just showing it, it's not a matter that we should be discussing, is that people are happy to put in five lifers together, call in a psychologist for a few hours a day, one, do a quick assessment of the group, and then, of course, the report that comes out is that all of these five inmates have been considered in one session with a psychologist, and therefore you may want to consider them for parole. And I'm saying it talks to some of the issues that have been raising, that you have absolutely no control over what happens in a PPP facility. Comrade Godi was just saying now, very soon they'll be visiting the center. You're welcome to visit the center. But let me tell you something. I was just referring to the commissioner that when you visit the PPPs, then we have to facilitate that you visit the PPPs, unless you are stopped at the gate from entering the facility. So, the chair is here to. So you have absolutely, to attest to what I'm saying, you have absolutely no control. I know National Treasury deals with issues of finance. But I think, colleagues, right, without saying we're not proceeding or proceeding with the four PPPs, I think that we should have been very honest with ourselves about decisions that we've taken, and if they require a review, you must have the courage to go on a review of policy. And lastly, Chair, I do want to say, ask the question, what becomes the role of a minister? When you enter, when you go into a government department and you discover pockets of policies that require a review, okay, is it proper that when you take that decision together with your collective that perhaps we need to review there and there and there? As I say, not in line with our with government priorities. There's no priority of looking after the children, the women. Nothing. So, what do you do? Do you then get stuck because the issue is around investors, and the issue is about National Treasury feels strongly that by reviewing your policy, you may actually antagonize investors. We want investment in South Africa. But certainly, I think that you cannot, in the course of doing that, compromise issues of national security, national interest. And I think that besides all of the other issues that we've talked to, our inability to accommodate for specific requirements of certain categories of inmates, I do not understand, and I will never understand why a decision was ever taken that all of the four PPPs that we are going to be building and the two PPPs that we already have will be PPPs, will be facilities that will house, right, maximum male, adult male inmates.
Yeah.
Okay? We have a steady increase in South Africa, right, of women who are in maximum facilities right now. There is absolutely no accommodation for them. And if you look at the facilities they are currently occupying, as you know, in moving around, you've seen it for yourself. Dilapidated facilities, that's another matter which we are discussing with the Department of Public Works. Dilapidated facilities, but I'm sure it should have occurred to people who took the policy decisions then that you may want to consider building, amongst others, a facility that will be used to incarcerate maximum women, or even medium women, or even women with babies, because we have many women with babies. Not only that. Study has shown now, by the task team, that the number of mentally insane, disturbed inmates is plus minus 3,000. South Africa does not have the capacity right now to look after that category of inmates, and we are housing them within cells, and they are mixed with other inmates and in the process, of course, they are vulnerable to be used, to be abused by other inmates, but also to be used to do other things. So I'm just saying, I think that when we deal with a matter, we should adopt an approach that is holistic to all of the issues that we are raising from Korea. And I think we must also be prepared to listen to one another. I think that's the most important thing in government, that we must be in. National Treasury are experts in finance. Okay? In finance. They are technocrats in numbers. Okay? But on our side, we also have concerns as politicians about those entities which we have no capacity. We have no capacity to take decisions over because they are located elsewhere. Custodial services should remain the core function of the Department of Correctional Services. Otherwise, we may as well not have a Department of Correctional Services. What we'll probably do is to have an entity within National Treasury that would say, this one goes TPP, this one, so that they then monitor the output from the side of the PPP. So, Chair, on that note, I do want to plead for talking, but not just talking, but listening to one another. I still feel strongly that people don't have an appreciation of the issue that we are talking about. People are simply concerned about the financial implications, the investors. The investors, too, must listen to what we want. I mean, we had a session with the investors. They also come back to say, no, it's Midway. We make our money from custodial services. That's in a nutshell what this thing says from the investors. Now, if you cannot be assisted by National Treasury to drive your own priorities or to drive your own objectives in the course of the interaction with the investors, then obviously I can't imagine that it will be DCS this side and then investors plus National Treasury, because the question that has been raised is very relevant, Jack, whether it's advocacy or advisory role. Whether it is advocacy or advisory. Maybe it's advisory role, but unfortunately there tends to be a lot of bias towards figures, investment, and in the process there may be something very seriously which we are compromising, and that is national interest. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister, and I think Commissioner and also DCS, this multi-disciplinary or multi-department task team has to meet urgently and review these things, including DCS, Public Works, Treasury, and somebody else. What we are clear about as Parliament, and I can speak on behalf of Parliament, what we are clear about is that we are not convinced that this is the route to go in its current form. And unfortunately, it is us that ultimately sign off whether this budget is going to be approved for everybody. So that's what we want to say to you. In its current form, we don't think that it is the most viable. You've heard some of our views. I know that DCS has through the Commissioner, in detail what our concerns are. So in this multi-party team, you'd have to put it on the table that whatever you do as government, there's a stakeholder that is equal, called Parliament. So you're not going to ramrock anything through Parliament. Whatever you do at government level, understand that you'll have to come and convince us about it. And some of our strong feelings are the ones that have been echoed up to now. Baba, man, I know it's a tough team for all of you. I think you have to listen, you've got to talk, you've got to find a way, balance the market versus our own concerns around interest. But in its current form, we've got a problem. In its current form, we've got a problem, and we'll expect government to find solutions to this problem. That's what we are saying from our side as parliamentarians. Thank you very much to everybody that has attended, and we will.